Hi there, it's Ed here with a short message before we start the pod this week. Did you know that our most informed investors get insights, articles, and investment ideas from Tom, me, and the team sent directly to them via email, and it is completely free. You can join them. Just subscribe at fidelity.co.uk/newsletters. Hello and welcome to the Personal Investor Podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, how do you spot the market-leading companies of the future? In a world where every investor is looking for the next big thing, is it really possible to separate out the winners from the also-rans? Ian Mortimer certainly believes that it is, and it's his job to do just that as manager of the Guinness Global Innovators Fund. He's our guest on the pod this week. If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. Every investor dreams of getting in on the ground floor of tomorrow's winning companies, those businesses that break new ground through new technologies or disruption and reap the rewards of doing so. But in a world where everyone else is looking to do the same thing, how can you find those companies? Ian Mortimer has the job of doing just that. As co-manager of the Guinness Global Innovators Fund, he is in the business of finding the companies that will be leading their markets for the next decade or more, thanks to their groundbreaking technologies, products, or business models. How does he do it? And where might those opportunities exist? I'm pleased to say that Ian joins me now to answer those questions. Ian, welcome along. When people hear innovation, they tend to think of new technologies, and I guess a lot of your work overlaps with that. But is that purely the innovation you're looking for, or is there more beyond that?
Yeah, well, firstly, thanks for having me. Great to be here. I think the word innovation, I think, can mean quite different things to different people is the first thing. We've actually been running this strategy since 2003. So I think in terms of how that's evolved and how the market thinks about it, it's definitely changed. And I think to some extent, it's been somewhat co-opted more recently by the idea of innovation being purely kind of early stage or disruptive businesses.
Right.
We think it's actually much broader than that. And ultimately what we're trying to look for are those sort of quality companies. They may be a bit more mature. They might not necessarily be the pure plays because they don't necessarily make the best investments. And ultimately trying to find those companies exposed to those kind of secular growth themes. That's kind of how we're thinking about it. And I think it's also broader than technology is the other part. You know, absolutely, there's lots of great ideas in that sector. But I think particularly at the moment, you know, you can definitely find sort of uses of new technology or innovation to other areas beyond just what you might initially think. So I think it's a combination of those ideas and then putting on top of that, crucially, is that a good investment as well? Because that's really what we're in the game of.
And well, people love the word disruption, don't they? I mean, that's sort of gone hand in hand with the sort of rise of platform businesses and et cetera. Is that something that sort of is in your lexicon internally? Do you look for disruption? Is it sort of necessary for innovation?
It's definitely something we think about. And I think you can think of it both in the positive and negative sense.
Yeah.
So you know, you've got to think about it in the positive sense of, is there an area that or a business model that can be disrupted? And ultimately, you're then thinking about that company taking market share. But crucially, you've got to think on the other side, companies that are being affected by that. And I think you know the idea of having to have disruption, I think, is not something we have to have. That isn't a box that must be ticked in terms of our investment thesis. Yeah. And in many cases, you know, again, coming back to that idea of, is it also a good investment? You can have disruptive companies that are doing interesting things, but will they necessarily be the long-term winner?
Yeah.
And it's trying to kind of improve the probability of making that good investment and taking advantage of that, rather than necessarily trying to be, you know, pick the early winner very early on, because that's really, really difficult.
Yeah. Well, let's put some examples to this then. What are some cases of companies perhaps where the fund has invested and these companies demonstrate innovation in the way that you're talking about, these different ways of innovating?
Yeah, I mean, it's a broad spectrum. And I think, you know, recent additions to the portfolio, one of the most recent purchases we made was London Stock Exchange Group. So this is obviously quite a mature business, but they're changing quite a lot. You know, some of that's through acquisitions that probably well documented, things like Refinitiv, but also then how they're using that and how they're adapting. So they are changing their business model to look more at how they use data and analytics. You know, they've got lots and lots of data.
Yeah.
How can they then repackage that? What could they use to sell or services they can provide on top of that? Things like some of the joint ventures they're doing with Microsoft look really, really interesting. And so that's a good example of a more mature business that's continuing to think about what can we do to move forward.
And in a great place to have the potential to innovate, I would have thought. You're just a very unique sort of position, a company like that.
Exactly. And so, you know, it has a lot of the characteristics we're looking for. So it has sort of, you know, established cash flows that enable the business to then reinvest back in itself to grow. Mm. And I think that's an important aspect of what we're looking for as well. Can these companies compound their growth going forward? Because it's one thing to kind of grow your revenues very quickly, going back to that idea of disruption, but can you convert that into kind of a profitable enterprise, which therefore, you know, gives you that long-term ability to invest and get those total returns that I think as investors we're really striving to achieve.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned sort of examples where perhaps the early innovating company isn't the long-term winner. I kind of love these examples, you know, these sort of obsolete products and bits of technology that sort of almost could have been the next best thing but were overtaken. How do you separate out those companies from the long-term winners? Or perhaps is that a game you're choosing not to play?
Yeah, I think in terms of, you know, you can take lots of different approaches. And you know, the example I always give is it's a very simplified way, the kind of venture capital approach. And you sort of invest in 10 companies. Some might go bust,
right.
Some might do okay. But if you get the one that goes up 100 times, you've got this great kind of IRR. Now, I think that's a perfectly reasonable thing to do, but it has, you know, lots of volatility, quite high barriers to sort of be successful, if you like. Whereas we're trying to look, as I say, increase the probability of a good return and avoid some of those sort of big blow-ups. But to answer your question, what do we look to do? We try to apply essentially a quality cutoff. So we start our process by looking at sort of secular growth or innovation themes. They're more kind of established. We look for companies with exposure to those themes. Mm-hmm. We then say which of those interesting businesses, which have potential pathways for growth, might be better investments. So we look at things like return on capital. Is the company actually profitable already? Can we understand the business model because it converted those revenues into earnings? And that quickly removes a lot of those sort of early stage businesses. And I think it's worth noting that there's some quite good research I was seeing recently. I think Sanford Bernstein did it. And they were looking at 10 baggers. So the kind of the idea of why you'd buy that early stage company is because you think it's going to go up 10 times, you know, the big winner. And what they did is they looked back over sort of the S&P 500 over a very long time and tried to look at which companies went up 10 times in terms of their share price and what were their characteristics at the beginning.
Right.
And they're not necessarily what you might think. Most of those businesses on average were more mature. So they were sort of $10 billion plus businesses. They actually had earnings. Mm-hmm. So they weren't kind of pre-earnings type businesses. And their multiple in terms of valuation was about the same as the market. And the way they went up 10 times was about growing the revenue, improving margins, so it compounds up the earnings, but then also you get the multiple re-rating. And I think that valuation part is actually very important in terms of when we're thinking about growth investing and thinking about investing in innovation.
And does the process lead you to companies of a particular size or at a particular stage in their development? I mean, you seem to be saying that the really early stage stuff might not be where you land. But does it rule out sort of very mature companies? Where does the process lead you?
Yeah, so I think it's, we have a minimum market cap cutoff that we look at of $1 billion. So we're not looking at small cap companies. Over the life of the fund, I think we've generally been in larger cap biased with some mid caps in there. But if you think about where we've been, say, in terms of growth investing for the last 5 or 10 years, it's actually been the very, very big companies that have been growing fastest.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's why I think when you're looking at this area, one doesn't want to be completely constrained by some of the, you know, it must be disruptive, it must be, creating a new technology, because actually you may have missed a huge opportunity, mm-hmm. which was some of these larger companies growing quite quickly, and therefore that's why we'd give ourselves the flexibility to kind of look across the market cap spectrum and also maybe consider those companies that are a bit more mature, and maybe that growth part of their business is a smaller part, but you might be able to get that growth, therefore, for a cheaper valuation
right.
than the pure play, where it's only that growth thing and people are getting very excited about it.
Yeah, and you mentioned there that a lot of the innovation and growth is coming from already very large companies, the biggest companies in the world, frankly. But there surely is a downside to that from the point of view that they're incredibly well-followed, already very expensive companies. Does this mean that you have to sort of overlook very high valuations when you buy for the fund, or are you easier with a high valuation than you would be with a different strategy?
Yeah, I think, you know, we are ultimately running a global quality growth strategy. We are looking for companies that can grow faster than the market. That is ultimately the factor, if you like, that we're trying to capture in terms of our outperformance.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, we are comfortable to pay a higher premium for companies if they provide the higher growth. However, the caveat being, one of the big risks of growth investing is you pay up too much for mm-hmm. future growth. So what we know is future growth is really hard to predict. We know high growth companies, their growth mean reverts quite quickly. So kind of projecting forward very high levels of growth generally doesn't happen. So what we're really trying to think about is what's the balance between the growth and the valuation we're paying for it. And a helpful way to think about that is kind of the present value of the growth opportunities. So if you have a business that's kind of creating cash flows today, you can kind of just, let's say it doesn't do anything to grow, it just carries on doing maintenance to just keep that current business. You can kind of work out roughly what that is worth from a kind of discounted cash flow. If you compare that to what the market valuation is today in terms of the market cap, the difference is what you're paying for the future growth. Right. So that's the option price, if you like, on that growth. And if you're paying a significant premium for that, then that's really an expensive option. And what we're trying to do is say, we're trying to minimize that option, if you like. And I think that's quite a helpful way of thinking about it. So when you look at our portfolio, you know, we would generally trade at about a 20-25% discount to the MSCI World Growth Index,
right.
for example. But our peg ratio would be better. Compared to the MSCI World, a more sort of normal benchmark, if you like, standard benchmark, we'd probably trade at 20-25% premium.
Mm-hmm.
But again, our peg ratio would be better because we're paying a premium, but we've got faster growth.
Yeah.
So it's that balance between the two things, growth and the valuation that you have to pay for that growth.
Which I guess, you know, begs the question around the big growth tech companies, the top of the US market in particular, the Magnificent Seven. What has been your approach to those companies, given what you say there about valuation and about growth into the future?
Yeah, so we've owned six of the Magnificent Seven. That's what we currently own at the moment. So we don't own Tesla, and we never have.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be the one that would jump out to us on things like valuation being very high, on the idea of paying up a lot for what they might be able to do in the future.
Yeah.
And that wouldn't pass the sort of the test that we're looking for in terms of that growth and valuation. Of the other six, we've owned a number for a long time. So NVIDIA is the sort of stock of the day. We've owned that for more than 15 years in the portfolio.
Wow.
So that's changed a lot. And other of those companies we've owned for longer times too. I think with the six outside of Tesla, I think when you think about from a valuation perspective, I think they still look quite attractive. They're mm-hmm. not at very, very extreme valuation levels. Yes, some of them are a premium to the market, but the growth on offer is pretty good.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing to think about is they've been slightly lumped together with this idea of AI. But I think the stories are quite different. So I think, yes, you know, NVIDIA absolutely is associated with that growth and the kind of explosive growth. But that story's also been, you know, top line growth, but also margin expansion. Mm-hmm. So they're selling more products for a much higher margin. They've got this huge barrier to entry because they have a combination of the better chips, but also the software that run those. Right. So that's quite a different story to something like Apple, which is more of a story around sort of product mix. Yeah. So they've got a kind of slightly more cyclical, you know, iPhone sales, and they've got a growing software services yeah. business. Excuse me. Thank you. And that's all about, well, that's going to improve margins longer term, and that's going to look different. So top line growth at Apple is going to be much more modest, but it's about margin expansion. Meta was about cutting costs and improving the multiple, you know, and it kind of goes on. So I think kind of differentiating between those six stocks and what the investment thesis is, I think is quite important.
And just off the back of that then, is it really a slightly unhelpful grouping, the Magnificent Seven? Is it just a sort of, well, these are very large and there's sort of,
I think it's a bit
superficial
unhelpful,
commonality, but...
Yes, I think it's I think it was a helpful explanation that these are seven stocks that are dominating market performance. That's really what it was about.
Yeah.
It was about saying, let's look at the total return we've seen and let's look at what companies were contributing to that.
Everyone loves a story, right?
And that was dominated. And then markets really like a nice simple phrase, right?
Yeah,
you know,
they do,
and,
they do.
And that maps it together. But I think actually what we're, so that was a very common theme through, say, 2023. And I think more of this year, we're seeing that divergence. Performance is different. Different drivers, and I think there's been a bit more of a focus on the kind of fundamentals, like Tesla, like Apple, like Nvidia, and so forth.
Yeah.
And I think that's definitely changing in investors' minds.
And you've mentioned AI; it's really front of mind, I guess, for a lot of people in markets and more widely. How do you see that technology developing? Do you even try to foresee where it may go? What do you think the most valuable uses for it will be?
Yeah, I think, you know, in terms of the winners from AI, I think to some extent, I think we'd be quite humble and say, you know, our crystal ball on that is as cloudy as the next person's.
Yeah.
So I think that's very difficult to know. I think if you think in very broad terms, if you take a step back, I think it's more, you know, around the idea of efficiencies, productivity. Mm-hmm. And it clearly is a very, very significant step forward in terms of many of those things. And so I think in terms of the winners, I think people are currently focusing on the kind of picks and shovels type argument. You know, mm-hmm. NVIDIA is going to have the best chips, but competition can change, you know, and you know, one should remember that, you know, when we're owning NVIDIA through, you know, 2018, mm-hmm. a big part of their growth in the market was all about Bitcoin mining.
You know? Right.
That was a dud, and the stock fell 20% on the day, whatever. You know, they were like, that isn't going to be a big part of our driver. So I think in terms of how we think about that evolving, it's a lot to do with the idea of where could that be applicable? You know, what types of businesses and business models, like more cyclical companies, for example, mm-hmm. May be able to, you know, improve productivity. Therefore, that's a really interesting use case beyond that. And I think the other thing as well is it's changing.
You know, yes.
They talk about large language models. I've just read recently, it's a lot about small language models. So how can you use AI on a from an efficiency perspective in terms of on your PC or phone? To have to send it up to the cloud to get done on a large language model and send mm-hmm. back is quite difficult, but maybe you could have more kind of niche cases. So you have a smaller model that could be run on with less power, but could do the job
right.
90% of what you would like,
yeah.
And that would be really, really efficient. So there's sort of lots of those ideas are changing, I think, you know, and it's difficult to know which one's going to be the winner. But that's kind of how we're thinking about it today.
Okay. Well, finally then, Ian, are there any other innovations across the portfolio and the companies within it that you're particularly excited about? Maybe technology, but maybe not, maybe something else. Is there anything that's really sort of getting you going at the moment?
Yeah, I think as I just mentioned, I think industrials has been maybe an area of the portfolio that you would not necessarily associate with growth historically. But I think companies like ABB, companies like Schneider Electric that we own in the portfolio are definitely showing the characteristics that we would seek. High quality businesses, you know, good growth, improving margins, and a lot of those things we were talking about in terms of companies that have exposure to trends but are not necessarily pure plays. And a lot of the, you know, the companies I just described would be around, you know, EV charging in the case of, sort of ABB, or building efficiency, or you know, factory automation and use of software within kind of more cyclical, kind of higher capex type businesses. I think can lead to re-ratings and a bit of a different view on those companies. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how we were trying to seek to position the portfolio as well. Have that diversification across different areas, sectors, geographies, and try and take advantage of that.
Great. Well, Ian, thank you so much for coming in. That is all the time we have for now. Thanks very much.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Money Talk podcast. Check fidelity.co.uk for daily written updates and articles on these and other topics from across Fidelity in the UK. And subscribe via iTunes to get the podcast downloaded direct to your devices every week.
Please note that the value of investments and the income from them can go down as well as up, so you may get back less than you invest. Investors should note that the views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon. This information is not a personal recommendation for any particular investment. If you are unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to one of Fidelity's advisors or an authorised financial advisor of your choice. Overseas investments will be affected by movements in currency exchange rates, and investments in emerging markets can be more volatile than other more developed markets. Reference to the specific securities should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities and is included for the purposes of illustration only. Tax treatment depends on individual circumstances and all tax rules may change in the future. Withdrawals from a pension product may not be possible until you reach age 55, 57 from 2028. This podcast may not be reproduced or circulated without prior permission. No statements or representations made in this podcast are legally binding on Fidelity or the recipient. This podcast is meant only for UK residents and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation in any jurisdiction in which it may be unlawful to make such an offer or solicitation.